हरिः ॐ
सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविदविषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay so just one thing on the before when mentioning about the sweet speech another aspect can we relate to the situation where let's say most commonly it would happen let's say with some other ladies something happens where they get the advantage by your mistake right but instead of react the other lady who got the advantage instead of her saying ha ha see I'm better this and that she says oh thank you for being so considerate you understand what happens can you do anything no you're just stuck you know it didn't go down the way you want it the dealings may not have been the way you liked it but because of the sweet speech you can't say anything you're just stuck If she said one thing that was not nice, then immediately then, you know, the whole range of, you know, how you say, tsunamic emotions could be unleashed. Does this make sense? This is the whole point of sweet speech. It's not meaning that, the ideal, of course, is one can always speak very nicely and it would be sincere. But one can also be speaking sweetly, though it may not have the sincerity of sweetness. Does that make sense? It's just the way it works good.
So how to react?
Be humble and figure out what you did wrong. Because it's obvious, they're speaking nice, but the situation is not nice. So then you have to adjust to make it correct. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I heard that even once you mentioned, even if one of the two is humble, then the relationship will go on.
Yes, but it works better if it's the man that's humble.
Yeah. But still, it's either one, right?
Yeah, it means the woman shows the man how he's supposed to be humble, yeah. And then after that, he's supposed to pick it up.
But he doesn't have to, right?
The point is if he wants to maintain his feminine position, then he can. If he wants the wife to go on in the masculine position, then yeah, he can do that.
Good.
You know? Good to know. But generally that works better with your mother. So if you're a bachelor living alone with your mother, you know, as long as you have a good job and bringing good money, then you can apply that, yeah.
Wouldn't it be considered an ashram?
Huh?
Would it be considered an ashram? You still
have a lady? Yeah, it means you're still a grihasta, just without a wife.
You have mother.
Yeah, but that's your mother. But that's not, you don't have a wife.
Somebody else's wife.
Yes. You know, father's house, father's wife, and you're there also. So. But best is that you're a lawyer and you have a Porsche. Then that will work really nice. And she should know how to cook. Like that, so. In other words, Italians can get away with it. Does that make sense? So now to speak nicely in all the situations, what does that require? It requires sense control, which it mentioned, and brain. You have to be clever. Right? Now when it says about the position of women are less intelligent, it's not meaning lacking in brain. It means lacking in discrimination between matter and spirit. It means if things are going great and fabulous, then yes, this is devotional, this is not devotional. But if push comes to shove, the tendency is women won't tell the difference. That's what's the less intelligent, right? So we're not talking about the academic side, but of intelligent, what kind of intelligence do women appreciate the best? Right? Cleverness. Because cleverness is practically applied. Right? When the men sit around and talk about, you know, you could do this, you could do that, women think it's pretty lame. You know, when man says something that's funny, and then all the other men, toss in their two cents on, you know, taking it and from various intellectual angles looking at it, and they're just like dying of laughter. And the women are looking at it and go, this is so childish. Where's the substance? Mm-hmm. Though it's using theoretical intellect, you know, analytical. So women, what they appreciate, what they consider real intellect is practical. So cleverness. Right? Does that make sense? So if the woman is cultivating that cleverness through sweet speech and getting all her work done, then they can cultivate that same and expect that same kind of cleverness from the husband, that he will then behave in that way and get that work done. Yes? Yes, of course. We're always talking utopia here. Is there any other way like that? You know, we haven't gotten to this. You know, the sunsets and the butterflies and all that kind of stuff like that. But, yes.
Does that mean that when Krishna says in the 10th chapter of the Gita that within women he's intelligence?
Yes.
Cleverness. That means cleverness.
That's basically that side. Because the analytical side, that's what men are famous for. Being able to analyze something without any commitment to it. Right? Women will only analyze something that they're committed to. So that means then, because you'll apply it and it will give a result. Mm-hmm. You understand? Because women always work, they are results. So they always work in result. But men are existence, so the thing is if it's just men, they just function in existence mode. It works fine for the men. They have a great time. In fact, they'll consider that relaxed, because they're just existing. Right? But the point is then if they want to interact on the social platform, means with women, then they have to add in the emotion and the feelings. Understand? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the mistake. Men think that, oh, we're so much more intelligent because we don't have to add in the emotion. But the point is when they do it add in the emotion, they're not up to the standard of the women who are clever. Because if they add that in, it's just attachment. It's not practical. Does that make sense? So men getting something practically done, then that's using that and using his intelligence that way, that means then there's a need. There's a passion. You understand? That the women can relate to. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Men want to get things done.
That's if there's something to get it done for. We're making the distinction here about the masculine aspect of Sankarshan and the masculine aspect of Prajumna. See, Sankarshan simply means existence. What's the rules? What's you know, just the analyzation of it. And simply that itself can be satisfying to a man, just to know. He worked it out and now he knows. Even if he doesn't apply it, still he knows. He's satisfied. Right? But if you want results, then you have to add in Prajumna, where there's an attitude, there's desire. And by that contemplation, with that knowledge, then there develops the attachment, which is the need. Then there's the desire for endeavor. You understand? So, therefore, since women are in that position, means that result is in the feminine position. Therefore, there's nothing greater to motivate men to up to a high standard of results. Endeavor and results and intelligence than women. That's why it says behind every great man is a woman. Do you understand? So So that's the principle. You know, we're just talking about the mechanics of it. You know, I mean, just how it functions, what's masculine and what's feminine. Does that make sense?
But if it comes to the point of solving the problems of life...
But what are the problems of life? Yes, disease and death, but how do you solve those? How are they solved? Birth, it doesn't mean by getting good life insurance.
But by acquiring knowledge.
But that knowledge, yes, but then what are you going to do with that knowledge? Okay, you know you're servant of Krishna, now what? So unless you apply it, how do you get the benefit? So that's the whole point, is that applying it in there, that's great. That's generally not where the men have a weakness. Where they have a weakness is implying that intelligence when it comes to women. Right? Because when they grow up in the family, do they need to actually apply intelligence for anything for their benefit to happen? No. You know, whether they're an idiot or not, the mother takes care of them. You understand? So they can't get anything done, do nothing, the mother still takes care. So the men then grow up thinking that's what women are, and just wife means that plus benefits. You understand? So that's the difficulty. So we're not dealing with men here. Because the mother's in the masculine position, the son's in the feminine position. So what you do is you have a girl who thinks they're a boy. And that generally doesn't go down so well. You know. Point is that you have to be able to practically apply yourself as a boy. Then you have a relationship. You know what I'm saying? You know, so if you claim to be the boy and don't act like it, and then the woman has to do the man stuff, they don't like that. Depending on the training, they may put up with it, and so the guy thinks he's doing great, but he's not. Does that make sense? Yes.
But can we say that the mother will always deal the same with the boy?
Yes.
But if he gets training in gurukul, for example,
right,
then that's where he gets his training. The mother still does the motherly stuff.
Yeah, the mother doesn't change her relationship, but the point is now he takes care of the mother. So now, on one lathe, her dealing and taking care and all that's there, but at the same time, now she becomes a dependent on the son in that he takes care of her. But that's only with training. Otherwise, she spends her whole life taking care of him. You know, but it's nice. It's a relationship. It's something to do. It's not ideal. You know, you kind of hope your boy would grow up one day. You know. Because it's one thing is they act like a kid, but they got a mustache. I mean, that's not cool. Right? You understand? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because also the element, if you use sweet speech, then the aspect is now, as we said before when we started the example, is that when something goes wrong, but you are still speaking nicely, you can't react badly. So what does that mean? The senses stay in control. So if the senses are controlled, that means you use your intelligence. So then for the boy, that means that he'll become sensitive to the situation. Right? So by doing that, it helps control his senses and makes him act in a sensitive way. Right, so when his senses are controlled, that inspires her to be chaste. And when he's sensitive, that inspires her to be satisfied. You understand? So either one of them are doing their duties, it inspires the other. So that's why it's a cooperation. Sometimes it may be started by one, sometimes by the other. Sometimes it's just a reaction. But the point is it's always within these fields. This is what makes it work. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. continue. Sri Narad Muni, oh no, it's up here. Okay, we'll just say. Sri Narad Muni continued, "My dear king, Brahmanas well conversant in Vedic knowledge have given their verdict that in every age, yuga, the conduct of different sections of people according to their material modes of nature is auspicious both in this life and after death." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "It is better to perform one's own occupation, though inferior, than the occupation of a superior varna. This is the conclusion of the knowers of the Veda. It is the cause of happiness." Sharma Krit. So the idea is that one may say it's an inferior position by social status, but it's not inferior in serving the Lord. Gaining the Lord's satisfaction, what position you use, there's no inferiority or superiority there. One with more devotion, that's superior to one with less. But on the social mechanics, there is higher and lower. There must be. How do you run a business if everybody has an equal say? No, there has to be the businessman in the superior position, those who work for him in the junior position. It just has to be like that, yes.
We mentioned before that varna means the austerities that, or whatever, the difficulties one is able to bear. Then you know what's your varna.
Yes.
But if somebody is doing somebody else's occupation, means the austerities and difficulties are more.
They're more, but the point is due to false ego or material need or attachment, you don't notice them as much.
Okay. So it's just because of prestige.
It's just because of prestige. Because if that opportunity wasn't there, then who would care? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Let us say, putting the deities to rest and waking them up in the morning. Will anybody ever know? No. Is anybody fighting to do that? No. Now, what about dressing the deities in the morning where everybody will see a darshan? Oh, then it's not, no, there must be equal opportunity and this and that and all that kind of jazz. Simply because it's something you'll see. You know what I'm saying? So those things that you'll see, like doing Mangal Artik or doing Evening Artik or the Artik on the festival day, then everybody steps forward in that. What about the 4 o'clock in the afternoon Artik? What about the 8:30 at night Artik? Nobody cares. But as far as the Lord's concerned, it's equal opportunity for devotion. But we take equal opportunity for social benefit, not equal opportunity for devotion. That's also where we mean by misused intelligence. Does that make sense? So things that are there, just like, women should be able to do what the men do. Is that, well, the men, it means men traditionally take the garbage out. Do we ever hear that the woman will take out the garbage? Okay, he's changing the diapers, he's vacuuming the rug, he's being a house husband, but he still takes out the garbage. But he does the work during the day, comes home, and takes out the garbage. So it should be she goes to the office, comes home, and she takes out the garbage. Will that happen? No. Why? Where's the prestige? There isn't any. You understand? So it's all about prestige. And all this kind of thing about, oh no, it's equal this, that's all just nonsense. All it is that equal opportunity to get benefits. So that's why it says here, then, quoting from the Lord, that one should not do that. Because it's just about picking and choosing what you like and leaving what you don't. It's not about taking the whole package. That makes sense. You know, the point is, the man brings things into the house, he takes the stuff out of the house. Like that woman wants to bring that, then she should take the stuff out. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. It's pretty simple formula, right? The Lord says, Shreyan svadharamo vigunaf para dharamat svanushtitat. Svadharame nidhanam shreyaf para dharamo Bhaya Vaha. It is better to perform one's own duties, even if in a faulty way, than to perform others' duties, albeit very well. Destruction in the course of one's own duties is beneficial. Performing another's duties is full of danger. Because the point is why are you doing it? It's because of the benefits you'll get. So instead of performing it for duty to please Krishna on the Naishkarma, you're doing it because of attachment. How is that superior? How is that advanced? So from going and performing one's duties, whatever it may be, and then, how you say, and going through the austerities of that, you're choosing something else that you feel gives you more benefit. So it's about the benefit you get. For devotees, it's not about the devotion. Understand? So we can't call that devotional service and say we're not the body. Understand? We have to discern what's what. And because you can do a skill that someone has, that doesn't mean you have the qualities to go along with it. Does that make sense? That's the point. You have to be very, very careful. They too have to go together. Srila Prabhupada adds, the Antyajas, the men of the lower caste, are accustomed to stealing, drinking, and illicit sex. But that is not considered sinful, right, amongst them. For those above them, yes, but for them it's not. It's not that they don't get reactions, it's that they don't consider it sinful. You understand? That's the point. You know, in other words, you can say but they're doing like that, but you know, these reactions are for humans. No. Reactions, yes. Reactions for humans, not for animals. So the Antyajas are animals. That's the point. When it says 8,400,000, 400,000 have human form, but actually very few of the 400,000 are civilized. That means human, by activity. So there's a difference between human form and human, by activities. So, since they are animals, basically, their reactions are different. They're not considered sinful. You know what I'm saying? You may consider it not good. Okay, drinking and driving, okay, that's not good, but how you say, drinking is not a problem. You know what I'm saying? Then you're just supposed to have some friends, they'll drive for you, you have the, you know, what is it amongst the friends, the one person that doesn't drink, you know, like that.
The designated driver.
But, you know, unless they pass it around, he's considered a bit of a weirdo, but, you know, they don't mind him around because he does the driving. Right? That makes sense.
When we say that they do get reactions.
Of course, because they're polluted consciousness.
Sinful and all. Reactions.
Means you like to walk around naked in the forest, you become a tree. You know. It means you get the reactions. But what we're saying is, in their social context, they don't consider it sinful. And the problem is, having lived a lifestyle like that, when you bring that into Krishna consciousness, then it becomes difficult to follow the actual human standards. That's where you really notice it. You understand? So that's why it's not recommended. You know, one has come from that, that's one thing. But then one tries to adjust. So, yeah. For example, if a tiger kills a man, this is not sinful. But if a man kills another man, this is considered sinful. And the killer is hanged. You know, it's just like you have... I'm not sure if it's... It's a common thing that there's some big cities, that there's areas of the cities that the police don't go into. Mm-hmm. But the rule is nothing from inside comes out. What they do inside, they kill each other, they use drugs, they whatever it is, nobody cares. As long as it does not come out on the street. Comes out in the street, then they go to jail. But if it stays inside their neighborhood, no one will bother them. Understand? So that's the point. The tiger kills a man, it's not sinful. If a man kills another man, this is considered sinful. Understand? And the killer is hanged. What is the daily affair among the animals is a sinful act in human society. Thus, according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties. According to the experts in Vedic knowledge, these duties are prescribed in terms of the age concerned. Right? So the main thing is depending upon the age, then you're going to have meditation is the prominent, yajna is the prominent, deity worship is the prominent, or sankirtan is the prominent. But the basic things of that, as I mentioned before, they don't change. Whatever the age, the verdict given is that in every age they're viable. It's just now so that's your lifestyle. Then on top of that, what become the particular occupational aspects, that's what may adjust before the age. So that Soma Yajna that you were always wondering that you weren't performing as a Grihastha, as Kali Yuga, you don't, it can be, you know, how you say, relax, you don't have to worry about it. You can scratch that one off the list.
Oh, there weren't so many Yantijas in the previous yugas, yeah?
They were out in the forest. They were the tribals. There'd be plenty of them, but they would be out in the forest. You know, that's not, they're not in, not in the cities, they're not in the towns, they're not in the villages.
Right.
They're in the forest. So you always hear about them bumping into forest people.
Right. Which is not so many.
Yeah, but it's not that they're not necessarily developed, and the skills that they had and knowledge they knew is not way beyond what today, you know, modern man may have. But the point was, is what they were using that for was not that developed.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for God consciousness. You know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that they're not God conscious. It's just that all these other things go along with it.
Right.
So it become, they become distracted. It's not. Like that. Yes, yeah, so in other words, historically you would see there's less. Now all the history is about Antyages. When's it about a nice guy? Right? Because who wins writes the history, the modern history. And the nice guys don't win. So they're not in the history. In the Vedic system, the nice guys write the history. Right? The liberated souls, they write the history. Right? So it's slightly different. It's not that there's not all kinds of nonsense there. It's just that the those who are educated aren't worried about documenting it.
Right.
Sri Narad Muni continued, if one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the nishkama stage. Footnote 8. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 32 to Bhagavad Arkamrithimala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Right. So this nishkam means he gives up these activities. It's not necessarily that the activity itself is stopped, but he gives up the need to perform the activity to get the result for himself. Does that make sense? Like, let us just say, okay, the guy's just going along having a good time. He gets a little money, you know, he spends it on this and that and so many of the things that are interesting to him or doing little things like that. Then he becomes connected with a girl. So now he doesn't spend his money like that anymore. It's not that he's not making money. It's just that he doesn't waste it on things that are just there because of his desire. Does that make sense? So that's the things you have to see is... giving up either means it's not important, so it's given up, and then you come to nishkama because you only do things that are valuable for Krishna. Or if it's things that are recommended to use in the field of nishkarma, then it's you're giving up the attachment to it. Does that make sense? Yes? Yes. So in other words, if it's recommended activities, it's not given up. But if it's not recommended activities or it's extracurricular, then those may be given up. My dear king, if an agricultural field is cultivated again and again, the power of its production decreases, and whatever seeds are sown there are lost. Just as drops of ghee in a fire never extinguish the fire, but a flood of ghee will. Similarly, overindulgence in lusty desires mitigates such desires entirely. Right? So now we're talking about, because the point is we were talking before about what are the occupational duties of the higher, you know, varnas, what is the nature, how the women, and then how the antyajas behave, right? And just their position, that they're behaving like that, okay, don't worry about it, right? Now we're talking about they, by following their duties, that's how they're going to uplift themselves. Right, as it said before, it's always auspicious to do your duties. How do the antyajas come to that position? That's what's explained here. Right? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, because it is impossible for a person with excessive material desires to give up desires by the rules of the Veda, rather than forbid all enjoyment, one is allowed to enjoy with an honest heart, and detachment will take place eventually. Examples are Yayati and Saubhari. Yeah. So you have that the how you say? The principle is that by following the path of enjoyment according to regulation, what's recommended, by absorbing oneself in that, then one again and again tries to gain something from that. But as it mentions, if you do something like in the field, you try to get something too much from the field, eventually it won't give anything. And the same way you put too much ghee, fire goes out. So the interest in it goes away, the example being given of Yayati and Salvari Muni. So they use that method. But according to what the Shastras say, right? So it may take a little bit more time, but it's very effective, right? While the Antijas, they'll use the same system, not because they're regulating themselves, just because they're totally absorbed in sense gratification. Because of that, they will burn out. And that's the window they have for taking up Krishna consciousness. Now, if they take it up nicely and keep a focus, then by that Krishna consciousness, that knowledge and detachment will come, they'll be able to maintain it. But if they don't accept the regulative principles of freedom, as is mentioned, you know, for those from the non-Vedic culture, that would be an oxymoron. Right, but by following these regulative principles of freedom, by following that, then they become situated there. Then they actually take up, you know, that natural higher lifestyle. Does that make sense? Yes.
Then missed it. But overindulgence. It says that it does mitigate the desires eventually.
Yes, but the point is how are you going to maintain that?
I'm just thinking about Osho. That was his claim.
And some said it worked. I was once, it was one Western lady came, joined the ashram, and she wrote some article afterwards that when she was involved in, I mean, all the other guys are talking about all this far out kind of stuff, but when she was involved in interaction with Osho, it was just really straightforward, you know. Really just vanilla, like that. So it had worked. But the point is that's his claim to fame. So therefore, he wants to be God, he wants to be famous, he wants to be this and that. But as far as his interest in sexual activity, that kind of had gone out the window. Right? It's not that it's completely gone, but it's reduced to the point where if you had proper association, you could give it up. You understand? That's why it's according to regulation. You regulate one's sense gratification, then one is able to conquer it. You don't regulate it, then there's always that, well, if I'd done this, if I'd done that, that's why there's regulation. You do it like this, and it's regularly done, then you start to see after a while it's not so special. And the Vedic system is, they're giving you the best way to go about in the engagement of the senses. That's also where the Antijas are just so downright stupid. The Vedic system is actually showing them how to enjoy themselves. And they're claiming, oh, we can't do that because we're Antijas. Then just admit, you're idiots. Because what it shows you is, you want to enjoy the senses? This is how you do it. You want sense gratification? There's Kama Shastra. You're not going to get better than that. Just no way. Cosmos will not give you the idea. Like that, you know? And sorry to say, but also GQ. It's like not quite there.
Cancel my subscription.
Okay. You want money, Artha Shastra. You want religious and, you know, this community of that, then Dharma Shastra. You want liberation, the Moksha Shastra. But you actually want the really real thing, then the Bhakti Shastras. But then to reject all that because, no, we're Westerners, we have a better way of doing that, that's just downright foolish. And why? Because the intelligence is stolen by illusion. Because intelligence is given by Krishna. He's knowledge, he's remembrance and forgetfulness. You don't depend on Krishna, you don't get it. You know, from both ways. Get it mean understand it, and get it means nothing. You don't, nothing happens for you. You know what I'm saying? It's like the West, okay, they're known for you know, liberalness and enjoyment into sexual activities. How many Westerners are there? Right? They're so free. How many Indians are there? And they're the ones that follow the rules.
Tiny.
Yeah, so that's the point. That's what we mean by the both terms of they don't get it. It's that simple. People don't like it. No one's going to like to hear this. But this is the reality. So that's why then the Vedic system is engage the senses in a regulated way in the appropriate manner for your position that you can get the best that is possible to get. Of course, it'll be according to your, you know, mentality and everything like that, but it's the best it's going to be. Then you can compare it and see, I've tried this, but it's not that special. Because the nature of it is, it will lose its taste. The fire will go out. So now if you have the fire of Krishna consciousness and the taste in Krishna consciousness, you have something to replace it with. And if you don't use this system and it's not connected to Krishna consciousness, means in other words, it's not done according to the direction of Shastra, then when the taste runs out, you'll simply shift the taste to something else. Like that. And the West is very famous for that. Doing one thing and then just, you know, I think they call it midlife crisis. That's their fancy name for it. The Vedic system is, you've followed all the things, you've done all the things for the whole time of Grihastha life, then it gets to the point where that passion, that desire, that drive, that interest is lost. What do they replace it with? By Nishkarma. They just come to the Nishkarma stage and go into Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So it works really well. It works like a charm. That's how it's designed. The Westerners just take up a new life, a new occupation, a new direction, a new something.
That's why the internet is so popular, because the mind can jump from here, from there, to there. Right?
Yeah, and also the, what do you call it, the, you know, 45-year-old truck driver can be a, you know, 16-year-old somebody in a chat room. You know, so it has many advantages. At least that's the cliche, right? Does this make sense? So that's the whole idea. That's what it's designed for. You follow Grihastha life properly, you lose the taste for involving yourself in the activities because of the sense gratification. Then it's just a matter of you performing your duties. So that's what it means by it's given up. All these gradually given up because all those activities of sense gratification are giving up. So what's left? The activities of devotional service. Some of them may be the same, but now you're cooking because it'll please Krishna rather than because you want to eat this or that. Does that make sense? It changes. So the activity may or may not, but the mentality, the motive, the drive, that's given up. And in many cases, some of the things that we're doing may not be important. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, getting from point A to point B, a scooter does it quite well. You don't need a 1200cc Harley. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Back to prestige.
Yeah, of course. Prestige. Yeah. Okay, so we see this. So, for the devotees, then this works, but it also, for the antyajas, it also works. But unless they can replace it with the varnashram system, then the tendency they'll fall back into the antyaja social system. Right? Because they don't have duties in that to replace it with. They don't have the concept of nishkarma. Because nishkarmya is not a non-Vedic concept. You know, unless it's the military, yes. Then it's going out, dying for your country, like that. That's it. But that's probably one of the only places where that's considered okay. Other places to do things because it's your duty, they'll all say, that's restrictive, that's this, that's unnatural, that's not real, that's not sincere, that's, you know, just blah, blah, blah. So many things. So, yeah. Sri Narada Muni continued. Footnote.
Yeah.
Nine. Yes, number 9.
even with the lights.
It is small. I mean, it's already, this is 10 point, and then this 9, is that 10 point? That must be something, I don't know.
Which is 10? That's 11 point there.
This is 11. So what's the, what are these, what's this? Really? That much? That little, so much enough? I would have thought that this is...
And the footnotes are 10.
Very small. But it's also because it's, no, nothing, because it's also in the position where quotation marks are.
Oh, sure.
Yes, yeah, so you always think that it's...
the shape, too.
Yeah, out. It's just kind of where it is, you always think it's that. Nard Muni continued, if one... we're on the footnotes. Reading the footnote, take three. Okay. Both Maharajayati's and Sobari Muni's stories are told in the ninth canto. King Yayati convinced his son Pulu to transfer his youth to Yayati so that the king could enjoy longer with his many wives. Eventually, Yayati accepted a renounced order of life and achieved liberation. Sobari Muni married all 50 daughters of Mandata after being agitated upon King Two Fish, engaged in intimate affairs. Later, Sobari Muni became very regretful and thus he accepted the order of Vanaprastha, performing very severe austerities and attained perfection. Wow, I didn't realize he married all 50 daughters. Oh, that's Sobari. I was thinking of Chavana. I'm mixing with Chavana. Is this a kirtan group or this is just visiting devotees?
Yeah.
There's many devotees who visit from around India. The yatras that come and they, when they go to the temple back, they do kirtan. Now, you know them, right? No. Pune, okay.
It's funny because they're just as loud as the ones that have the speaker system.
Yes.
I like that better.
Yeah. Yes, less piercing. You know, you can see we could talk, but you know, you don't want to. But the other one, you just have to stop talking.
Right? I've heard sometimes.
You heard?
Yeah.
You heard.
I just don't remember the source.
Yes.
About King Yayati.
King Yayati.
Of course, if we had the opportunity to delight him, maybe our desires would also subside eventually. But
it mentioned he engaged the senses to the fullest that they could be engaged, but according to all the rules given in the Dharma Shastra. He never broke any rules. He just engaged himself according to what the Shastra recommends for engaging the senses. But he made sure he didn't miss an opportunity. Right? Well, we're even too lazy for that, you know? You know, we could get that, but we're just too lazy to get up and go into the kitchen and make that sandwich. You know, it'd be great if someone else came along and made it for us.
You know? But that's the detachment part.
Yes, but that'll work. So then it's working, right? Because you come to the point of nishkarma because you're just too lazy to do the work. So it has its effect.
Maybe it's in both ways.
Yes, but then if somebody walks in the doors, hey, while you're in the kitchen. Yes.
Yeah. Brothers used to start describing what they wanted. Doesn't that sound good? Yeah. Well, while you're getting yourself one, bring me one too.
Yeah, oh, okay.
They'd always hook me every time.
Because you'd get it, oh yeah, that's great.
And
yeah.
They'd say, hey, you want some lemonade? Oh yeah, I love lemonade. All right, well, while you're getting yours, bring me one. Or sandwich, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's clever. See, that's called using your intelligence. That's clever.
Lazy intelligence.
Sweet.
Yes.
Sweet skill.
Yes. See?
They did utilize that.
Yeah, and most likely you'll find that they'll really be grihasthas, you know, really be absorbed in family life and stuff like that. You know. that'll just be there. Because that's the point. They have that kind of intelligence. So then that attracts that kind of environment. Yeah, that's another thing. Because they tried that on their wives. That's the point. No. Yeah. Right. It works on men. They did it to you. That if you had a sister and they tried it,
yeah, it didn't work on
it
her.
Didn't work on her at all. So that's the point, is they should have understood that.
Yeah. They should adjust the technique.
Yes, that's the whole point. So if they could have figured out how to get their sister to do it, then it would have worked in family life. But what I mean by is their attachment is so great and their cleverness, so they would get married at the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're still on the footnote. Okay. We did?
Yeah.
We did. Okay. Okay. So Narad Muni continued. If one shows the symptoms of being a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra as described above, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. Right? So that's important. It says, even if someone is born in a different situation than Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, you know, I mean, they're born in whatever situation, but they show the symptoms of the character and activities of a different varna. They should be accepted according to that those symptoms, not by birth. Right? This is just the Vedic standard. So this idea is that it's by birth, that is, some people who are interested in prestige in that, they maintain that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just not accepted. It's not appreciated. Someone act outside of that, because those on top, then they aren't qualified. They're no different than ones on the bottom. So how do you make the distinction? Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Well, you have kind of the reverse. The ones on the bottom don't like their people acting like the people on the top, you know, especially if it's artificial. If it's real, then that's fine. But if it's artificial, then the other guys are already doing it and they're already terrible. So why should we do that? You know. So. Yes.
Why was Karna accepted as a Kshatriya?
But on the battlefield, would they fight with him or not? So he was accepted as a Kshatriya. What they didn't like was his attitude. His attitude was that of a Suta. So that was the complaint. It means, in other words, Arjuna, he's going to string the bow at the Swayambhar. What's the unique thing that he does that no one else did? He circumambulated the bow first. He respected the bow. When he got the chariot, you know, from Agni, what did he do first? Circumambulate. Then gets on the chariot. No one else is doing that. Right? So, here you have a teacher and his students. And he is showing, you know, the parents, the kings, the community, their qualification to function as, you know, from this aspect of kings. The martial side. Right, because you expect the martial side from kings. So then he was demonstrating what they could do. And so it was only so that the people would be inspired, right? The citizens should feel safe. That's the whole point. So it's about the positions of kings being protecting the citizens. So they're showing their prowess. Otherwise, what's the need to show? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Now, Karna walks in out of prestige to show, I can do whatever Arjuna can do. Who invited him? Who asked him? He doesn't respect Dronacharya. He doesn't respect Kripacharya. He doesn't respect the students in performing things on the request of their teacher. So, where is the etiquette? So, is it... Who might not act according to etiquette, right? Because Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra will act according to etiquette. Who, as in this list that we just listed, doesn't act according to etiquette? If they did, it's nice, but if they didn't, it's not sinful. Who? The antyajas. So a sutta means antyaja. So his mentality, he's acting like an antyaja. That's why they're not accepting. But as far as they're never in any way not dealing with him as a Kshatriya. But, so Duryodhana, though it's also his spiritual master, I mean, or at least his teacher's opportunity to show off the skills of his students, but Duryodhana also does not respect that. And he sees the opportunity to get this person you know, how you say, on his side, because here's someone who can match. So for him, it's just a political move. The other one's the social status. For Duryodhana, it's a political move. But the whole thing was just to create inspiration in the citizens. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is these are the mentalities. That's why it's always shown against the good qualities of the Pandavas. And then the bad qualities there. When it says setting the scene, you are setting the scene that, you know, it's a battlefield and all this and that, but what you're really setting the scene is in the same situation, how does Arjuna deal? How does Duryodhana deal? Arjuna becomes humble. Duryodhana becomes more proud. Arjuna becomes respectful to his authorities. Duryodhana tries to manipulate them, you know, and get done what he wants. You know what I'm saying? Arjuna is willing to, you know, using higher qualities, come to an understanding. Duryodhana wants to take full advantage of that. Does that make sense? That's the real setting the scene. And the other, you know, that's the environment in which it goes on. Does that make sense?
So he messed it up immediately when he came in the arena, so with his attitude.
Yeah, that's all, because that's already. If he had come in and been respectful and all that, and said, "As you know, you're showing these prowesses, I'd also like to, you know, either join with the doing, or, you know, show something, or, you know, whatever it is," but he didn't. You know, he could have done it in so many different ways, but he didn't. You know, but that's what makes, that's why people read Mahabharata, because he didn't. Yes?
But why did he act it so without any respect? Because, I mean, his father is the sun god, his mother is Kunti.
He doesn't know that.
It's just the environment where he brought up, where he...
No, but what I'm saying, he doesn't know that.
Yadan and Shakuni and the association.
Why is it such an attitude?
Yeah, you could say that, but he got that association afterward. He grew up with suttas.
But he acted against his nature.
He was extremely charitable. And of all the individuals at that time, he would have been the most charitable. So that worked to his advantage and to his disadvantage. Right? So he was the most charitable. Okay? Yes? No?
Yeah.
So that side is there. When it came down to how to defeat the Pandavas, and Shakuni had some diabolical plan, Duryodhana always preferred that. But Karna always said, no, why don't we challenge them to an open fight? You know, nothing hidden, nothing this, you know, with chivalry, go out there and fight. We're more powerful, we can win. Why do we need to use this politics? Then it has to be pointed out by Shakuni that, you know, no, you don't have that. You know? So, but he always prefers that. So that means that side is there. But what we're talking about is this aspect of mixed varna. Right, because one quarter of your karma is, or nature is, by association. So he grew up with the suttas, so he has that as part of his one quarter. One quarter is the situation you're born into. The other quarter is association. And the previous is, what was your nature last life? Last life he was a straight up front demon. Yeah, I think he was Kalanemi. Okay. So he was, you know, so he's born with that kavacha. He's born with the kavacha, not that it was also there. He was born with it. It's part of his body. Because he had a benediction to have 100 of those kavachas, so if anyone destroyed it, another one would just replace it. So then Narayan Rishi came, because he also had a benediction. He could only be killed by someone who's in meditation doing samadhi. You know what I mean? In samadhi doing meditation. Right? So he's like Hiranyakashipu. You think of a situation that's impossible. And so who can be sitting in yoga meditation and be fighting with you at the same time? Right? What he didn't consider is the Lord can do these things. Therefore, Narnarayan Rishi. It's not Narnarayan Rishis. It's Narnarayan Rishi. They're considered one. It's the Lord and, you know, his part and parcel, the Jiva. So they're representing that oneness aspect. So Nara sat down in meditation and Narayan fought with him. And so he destroyed one after another of all his covetous until the last one, but instead of destroying it, he left it and just killed him straight. So he was born the next life with that covetous. So he was a demon, so that came from last life. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? You know, he's associated with these others. Like that, he has that aspect. Who knows if anyone did the death rites, that's the other quarter. You know? Okay, then let's look at his birth, since you mentioned the birth. Okay, so Kunti Devi, then she's done very nice service, right? So she can be very, you know, responsible, very loyal, like that, right? And because of that, she got this mantra from Durvasa, who then, by chanting it, she can call any demigod she wants. Okay, but that's not just call him over. We're having a party, you know, and like, you know, can you, you know, call in Agni because we're, you know, we're having a bonfire and, you know, we just wanted to kind of, you know, it all to happen nicely, and, you know, or it's really hot here in the evening. We're sitting on the hills and it really, what do you call it, sultry and all that. So you call in Vayu to, you know, create a pleasant breeze or that, or you're out in the desert. You're really, really thirsty. You'd just like to take a nice bath. So you call in Varuna, you know, not talking like that. I mean, they're being called for children, right? So she calls Surya, so, you know, because it's like that. She's a little girl. She's got this mantra. She's curious. Does this mantra work? She chants the mantra. There is the demigod. You know, it's like, oh, okay, mantra works. So we're good, you know, like that, you know. Yeah. But he says no, because can he go back? He's called. There's a mantra that calls him. That means he has to go. He's controlled by that. It's given by the sage. Okay, everybody will accept that. But then it should accomplish something. He's the sun god. He gets there, and then the girl turns him away. How's that going to look on his resume? No. So therefore, he demanded, no, we're going to have a child. So what was his reason for having the child? Prestige. Okay? So therefore, that's why prestige is so important to him. Right? And because she's technically not married, the quality of the child is also not going to be that great. Though being the sun god, he maintained her, you know, how you say, maidenhoodness, like that. It worked. Does that make sense? Yeah, so therefore you can see these things. So she was also worried about her position, the prestige, what will people say if she ends up pregnant with a kid like this. And so she was worried about prestige. Sun guy's worried about prestige. So Karna is not going to be worried about prestige? Yeah, so that's where that comes from. So he is from technically great parentage. Now, if it had been known beforehand, if when he came at that time, then Kunti had revealed who he was, then Yudhishthira and all his brothers would have accepted him as the senior brother. He would have been the emperor. And then Duryodhana, he could go fly a kite. You know, it's just like, because if Karna is there with Yudhishthira and the other Pandavas supporting him, Duryodhana can't do anything. But then, where's the fun? Yeah. Therefore, it didn't work out. He found out later, but it was already too late. Because he has that, from his mother, that loyalty and that committedness and everything like that. So, you know, he couldn't adjust. He's a Kshatriya. He gave his word. He can't adjust. Even though it would be better, but, you know, there is a higher principle, but he has given his word. So on one level, you can say, yes, that's good. But when we say the higher principles and all that, you should have said, now that he knows, now he's going with the Pandavas. But the problem is the Kshatriyas have a tendency not to be able to forget, and so therefore then, you know, all the things that has happened to them that he feels has happened because of the Pandavas, but all the support that Duryodhan has given, so then he can't adjust with that. If he was a Brahmin, then he could adjust, but as Kshatriyas, it's harder for them. Does that make sense? So is that now? Yes. So that's why the first thing is on these stories is that what's the principle that's being learned or taught? You know, that's what we gain. Then if we have some side details why this is like that, then we go into that. So what we see is that in the discussion, Parikshit Maharaj understands the point that's being made. Then he asks a further question on some detail of the story or something that didn't seem to match. Because there's always backup stories. That's the thing of the Puranas. Everything is there. But it's just they're not all set in one place because there's a specific thing you're talking about. So you only have to describe the story as much as establishes that point. Then for other questions, then there's another conversation on the same topic that uses the same facts that bring out other facts. You know what I'm saying? So. Okay. So this is footnote 10. Did we mention that?
No.
Footnote 10. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti. Bhakti Anukul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Right? So, understanding one's position, using that in devotion, so that you can use that properly in devotional service, that's favorable devotional service. That you act according to what actually the nature is, not according to birth, that's also then what's recommended. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's the position. Because by acting in that way, then that will bring you to the nishkam stage. That will then, one will be able to, you know, do everything for Krishna. Sis? Yes?
Nature is defined by qualities, not by birth. So when we say there's pratyavama or anavama, like when there's no pratyavama or anavama, there's equal, matched couple, and they have a child. It means
generally speaking, they will always be the same.
You have a pure nature which might be different from the parents because it's not defined by
birth. The point is you don't know why he's there, you know. Just like Manu mentions that by impure thoughts, then one of the reactions to that can be birth in a lower family. So that's why sometimes you see, you know, one just in general devotees, but you see some devotees that they're born in some situation, but then very quickly they come up to a very advanced stage and become like this. So that would be most likely that kind of a scenario. You know what I'm saying? You know, or what do you call it? Narad Muni, because of the mentality, then he takes birth amongst the Gandharvas. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So you just have that. You have that aspect. So that's why it says you go by what's there. Or it can be because the demons, because it mentions also in Mahabharata that the demons, because they were not... The demigods, after all these different things, the demigods come out successful, so they can't get the prestige and control that they want, right? Rather than being satisfied with whatever nice facilities they have, they want more. And so, not being satisfied by that, then they start taking birth in all these various families so they can control. So some amongst the, you know, the animals or this, then they're the biggest, you know, lion. They're the biggest, jackal. They're the big, you know, it's like this, and that way they can control. Or they also, in Kali Yuga, take birth in the Brahmin families because of the prestige and everything like that. So where you see is that they're born in a Brahmin family, but the mentality is totally not Brahminical. Then that can be that aspect. That's why the Vedas are saying, because there's so much involved in the karma and this and that, that then it's about you go by what are the qualities, not by their birth. But generally, most of the time, the parents are properly matched, they perform the samskars properly, then what is their nature, the child will be the same. like that. And even if they don't, if they're born not according to samskara and they have children not according to samskara, generally they'll end up with pretty much the same. Does that make sense? So it's because of this sameness that you can kind of create your social demographics. You understand? So, you know, intellectuals, their children tend to be intellectual, you know, business people, their children go into that, so artists, their children are like that. So because of that, you can identify in that way. But it's not always. You know, there's always, at least in America, in grade school and junior high, you always, you know, when you still have a little bit of idyllic kind of aspects there, then you always hear the stories about, you know, the kid born in the really, really, you know, low grade position, but then somehow or another he keeps, you know, hope and moves forward and becomes somebody very, very prominent, you know, like that, especially in the intellectual field or, you know, things like that, and, you know. So, you know, it's something that then is inspiring, you know, so at least that's the, how you say, the American dream, is that anybody can do it, you know, like that.
Or Indian families picking out my child in art.
Yeah, like that. But even in those established families, you know, you have this really rich family, powerful, they're good in business and politics and, you know, the whole whatever it is they can get done. You know, they all have good educations, they all have good situations, but the kid wants to be an artist. Yeah, then that's a problem. You know, it's like, what's going on? He's supposed to take over the family, you know, empire. Does that make sense? You know, so that's moving down. Or he wants to move up and be something higher. You know, that's okay if his elder brothers are and he wants to be a priest, then that's okay. But if the first one wants to be a priest, you got a problem. But, you know, it's like that. That's why you go by the qualities. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur clarifies. However, if a man designated by a particular varna shows the qualities of another varna, he should be classified according to that other varna and should be called by that name, such as Brahmana. Right? So that's the thing in the Vedic system. The king, one of his duties is to see that everybody's performing their duties according to what is the Shastric recommendation. So if someone's from a Brahmin family but they're busy in business and there's no opportunity for doing the Brahminical activities, then he's left alone. He's counted as a Brahmin who in the state of emergency is doing business. Right? Because you see the Brahminical qualities in his ashram side, but in the Varna side you don't. But if you see is that the opportunity to do the Brahminical activities is there, he doesn't want to take it, he preferred to do business, he's reclassified as a businessman. Does that make sense? These are the duties of an Ave Kshatriya. You must see that everybody's performing their duties. What is meant by, quote-unquote, showing qualities is showing general qualities like control of the sense and mind for the Brahmana, for instance, not particular actions like performing sandhya rites. Right? So that's what it means. Is qualities means you have the guna and the karma. Right? Because the karma, as it says, don't perform somebody else's duty, even if it's done nicely. Better to perform your own, but it has a problem than to do another's. Because one could say, no, but it's practical. Because no, because the real point of the Brahman is the qualities. Right? Does that make sense? That he studies and teaches. That he has those qualities. That's the main thing. But certain ritualistic things, this and that, many people get interested in so many things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, it's not about the karma. Just because they're doing the karma, that's not the main point. It's do they have the guna that goes along with it. Now, if they are performing the karma and they have the guna, then you'll say, then in this case, example, they're a Brahmin. But if they have the guna of something else and they're performing the Brahminical activities, then they're not accepted as a Brahmin. Because by doing that, then, you know, they can be, you know, how you say? you know, they could be doing it just because of prestige, or, is, you know, if you're a Brahmin in begging, you get more than if you're not a Brahmin in begging. You know what I'm saying? That's why Manu says, if someone's acting as a Brahmin but they're not, so giving a charity to them, you know, appropriate for what's done or the situation, you get double the benefit of giving to an ordinary person in the same situation, because at least you're respecting the aspect of that it has the Brahminical form, though you know they're not Brahmins. Does that make sense? So it's still, the form has a value, but it doesn't change their position. Yes?
When we speak about unjust movements, mixed bodies, so we judge by the prominent qualities.
Yes, by the prominent.
And then it might change with time, association, because
but
there's so
which
many
way would it change?
Hopefully to the better one.
Because if it's going down, that just means they're falling back into their natural position. It means natural meaning, you know, their condition. But if it goes up, that means it's purified. Because let us say, just for example, you have somebody, let's say, is Brahminical nature, but somehow or another what they think about is not ideal. They take birth in a low family. So because of that association, they happen to be functioning in that way, kind of that value system and this and that. But when they come in contact with, let's say, the devotees, because I'm only saying this in connection with devotees. If they're not devotees, generally you will not see changes happening. You'll just see what's there, and then you'll classify. Well, only with devotees, then you can see this. So what happens is the mode of ignorance starts going by the devotional process. Then learning knowledge or practicing, the hearts become purified. So then what's going to pop up next? A little passion. And then what's passion and ignorance? What varna is that?
Vicious.
So then you'll see some kind of that mood. They continue. They don't get distracted. Then they'll get purified more. So then some goodness will come. The ignorance is getting less. So in the goodness and passion, then you get, then you keep going, then get promise. So it'll go up as far as what actually is their nature. But that's only, you'll see that in devotees, and that because devotional service is so powerful, it can purify like that. Some people won't agree with this, but the point is that's practically how it works, because you're working by, you can't change the nature. Point was, is the nature was, let's say in this case, Brahminical, but it's been covered. So yes, you're not changing it. It's not that they were a Shudra, now they become a Brahmin. No, they were a Dvija Bandhu, now they become a Dvija. You understand? So they were a Brahmin Dvija Bandhu. Then they went back to being a Brahmin as they become purified. So if someone born in, say, in a Brahmin family takes up bad association and all that, and he becomes an outcast, he's accepted. Now let's say he again takes up his Brahminical activities. No one's going to complain if he comes back to the standard. So in that way you could say, yes, it doesn't change because they were of this higher nature. Mm-hmm. But it's covered.
But the tinges remain?
It means that association is there. They follow a nicely devotional service. Then to that degree it'll go away. But otherwise, yes, the tendency is something will be there. Now this is where it's, you know, you're talking about, you know, someone born in a Brahmin family, proper parents, and he's not of that varna. But when you have mixed varnas and all this and that, you're definitely going to have a mix. But they're mixes of what? They're mixes of Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of what you end up with. And then, like you said, what's prominent and all that. So by the devotional process, all the qualities of the demigods can develop. So they can come up to that standard. But in the meantime, if they're qualities that aren't ideal, it's not strange. But it doesn't mean that it's okay. It just means like the antijas. You don't worry about it. So if devotees have unfortunate qualities, we don't worry that they have it. You know, as long as they're engaged nicely in the devotional process, mistakes will be made. But if they identify with it and become proud of it, at that point, then that's when you, that little red button that requires a few different people with, you know, handprints and retina scans, that's when you push that button. And it's not allowed. Because, in other words, being substandard and then claiming that it's grand, that's just not allowed. That's just not. This means he should be given the respect like a Brahmin. One should not say, performing another's dharma is dangerous, since attaining qualities like control of the senses and mind is not another's dharma. Right? He has the qualities. In other words, how do you tell the dharma? By the qualities, not by the skill. That's the thing of modern day. No, anybody can do anything. Yes, they can. Skills, you have a brain, anybody can learn the skill. Right? But does that mean that's what they should be doing? You know, businessman, he's smart, right? Otherwise, how does he make money? So, could he learn medicine? You know, as a way to make money, yes. Will he be a good doctor? No. Will he make lots of money? Yes. So that's what we're talking about. Is that if you have the gunas, then you can say you can do the karma. But if you don't have the guna, but you say I can do the karma, that's mixed varna. That's on teaching.
Is that why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, do your own duty?
Yes, that's why. Because otherwise, you're doing the skill, but you don't have the attitude.
Yeah.
So you expect an attitude along with the skill.
Mm-hmm.
And so then if it's all about false ego and prestige and facility that you gain, how is that valuable in devotional service? So why would we want to go that way? Since it's about humility, if one's in a lower position, take it. What's the problem? It's advantage. Any service can be done for Krishna, and that humble attitude is even more beneficial. So why not take that instead of falsely trying to gain prestige? It's not devotional. It's not desirable. But by modern standards, it is. Therefore, it's considered it's good because of the vox populi, vox dei heat. You know, that's the whole point. Is that therefore, Shastras say this, but that doesn't matter. It's a local ethnic thing. But this is done in this community, you know, in the West, and so that's the authority. So what are we saying? What's popular amongst the people is the Word of God. You know, if you say that, was that what you said? No, I'm not saying that, but the point is that they're juxtapositioning, you know, what the antijas are doing and what the Vedic culture is doing, and saying they're just two different ethnic things, so they're equal. So one is given by God, so for the other one to take that position, you would have to be saying that the voice of the people is the voice of God. Or you have to be saying that the Shastra and all that's nothing to do with God and all that, and then show yourself to be a real demon. You know, so that's not advisable. Devotees don't do that. Does that make sense? So, avoiding the atheistic mentality, we accept the Shastras and we understand the position of what's what, and then we act accordingly. You don't like something, fine, but then position yourself there. You know what I'm saying? You're only worried about what prestige and what people will think of you and how it'll go and how you'll socially fit in. That is for Shudras. So then acknowledge you're a Shudra and do the duties of a Shudra and be happy. Do what you like, eat what you like, dress what you like, and who's gonna care? But you can't say that, no, we're top class Brahmins and this and that and it all is equal and it doesn't matter. You can't do that. That's atheism. That's against the Shastra. Is that clear? So that's the whole point. And then one could be humble. You're Shudra, then you're humble. And be respectful to the others. You'll make advancement very quickly. But if you take on this false pride and claim that you're something special, then as Manu mentions, you get 100 times the reaction for it. So that's definitely not good. You know what I'm saying? Doing something and getting a reaction for it is already bad enough, but to increase it times 100, that's not good. Well, if you're working in devotional service, then it may be reduced, you know, to 100th. That's better. You know. So that means it's a difference in, you know, in 10,000, you know, what your reaction is. You'd be getting 100th, or you could be getting 100 times. So, you know, use your intelligence. Just follow the thing. That's all it's saying. Whatever's the position, what is the natural nature, that's what you accept. That's what you accept as your duty. But then that means the guna and the karma go together. Not that I have the karma, but not the guna. That's not proper. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One famous Russian preacher once said, I was observing, he's a psychologist, he's a preacher, and I was observing devotees, almost every single one of them has some psychological issues. And that's why.
And my mother would agree with that.
Yeah, and it,
she has a saying, it takes one to know one.
And as we're discussing, it seems like.
No? Yeah. Yeah. Mothers are smart.
It seems like the power of devotional service is purifying nature, but because we're not being situated properly in the.
No, but the point is this, who defines what's crazy? If he's a psychologist, who did he learn from? He learned from a Viennese guy. Who all he could do is interpret everything as sex. And then we're going to take this as authority, and now he's going to apply this to devotees? You'd have to be crazy to do that. Hence, you know, the proverb that my mother said. You know what I'm saying? Modern psychology cannot define what's normal. They can simply tell you what's crazy. Because the point is if you're in the material world, you are crazy. So the difference between crazy and clinical is crazy, you can function in society. Clinical, you can't. But it's the same thing. All it is everybody's lusty. When that lust goes too far, that's called clinical. That's all. So you reduce the lust, then you go back. So it's not a surprise that everyone's like this. So why is he surprised? But can he notice the good qualities that they've developed by doing devotional service? If he can't, what is the use of that psychology? Then it will just be a stumbling block in their devotional service. You understand? So, as one devotee who was who had studied to be medicine, to be a doctor, and in part of their training they have to spend X amount of weeks on that in an insane asylum, you know, studying that. They also have to know that. So he was there and he got to know all the different things and all the different kinds of mentalities are there. And after he became used to that, then he was riding back on the train one day home. And he noticed that everybody on the train had those same symptoms, but just in a minute amount. So that's the point, is when that increases, they become clinical, they end up in a clinic. Right? And if it's workable, they like that. So that's what we're saying. We're saying that everyone in the material world is crazy. Shastra says that. Why is it a surprise? Why bring it out? That someone is there doing devotion, because if you want to bring it out, what are the forms? Where's the craziness? In karma and jnana. So if you can explain how to bring yourself to the platform of detachment, this nishkama, by engaging that craziness in Krishna's service, then we have a valuable, that's Vedantic psychology. But if you can only just point out this guy's crazy, that guy's crazy, so it's like every rickshawwala, every person who's into gossip can do that. Right? You go into the temple in the morning, darshan is arti. People are standing around, just sitting and talking about that. What are they talking about? How everybody else is crazy. So why is that special? Now, look at this. Somebody went to school, spent so much money, 4 years of their life, did internship, hung out with crazy people, and all that, and now they can tell they're crazy. The other people just grew up, and then they have Facebook, and they can tell people are crazy. So who's actually stupid? The guy who just naturally learned it by association, or the guy who actually worked at it, spent so much money, and he can still only do the same thing? Yeah, so in other words, using these things on devotees is not the process. You want to do it, then there is a process. We just described this. This is all describing psychology. If they don't understand this, they do not know psychology. Because the modern psychology cannot define what is the intelligence, what is the mind. It can't. Just like quantum physics can't describe time and space. So what they like, those who are honest in the field will admit that. So in reality, they're actually more ignorant than the average person. You know what I'm saying? Because being able to bring someone from the platform of clinical insanity up to the point of sense enjoyment, whoopee, such one has done so much greatness for the world. Okay, so here, one should not say performing another's dharma is dangerous to that person who has the qualities of that seemingly other dharma. Since attaining qualities like control of the sense of the mind is not another's dharma. Right? That's your own dharma. What qualities you have, that's the dharma. Right? In other words, to be fault-finding, that's not a psychologist. If the faults you're finding are the forest of material enjoyment, paranjana, that kind of thing, and showing how then we're connected to that, that's valuable. But just to say, oh, this one's this and that one's that, they don't even know why it's that way. They just observe and, okay, guy's, you know, talking to himself. You know? But why that is, what's going on? Can they explain the mind and intelligence that are talking to each other? When you have a conversation with yourself, that's intelligence and mind. Can they explain that?
That's doesn't put
you in sense. Just don't talk out loud, because other people, they're also doing it, but because they don't talk out loud. So what I'm saying, it's the extent. So when you talk out loud that you're not aware of other people, that's then clinical. But if you just do it in your own head, then and say that you don't do it, then that's called normal.
Sometimes the conversation is so
bad. Yeah, it gets very emotional. Yes, like that.
What about the ahamkar? Does it also conversate?
It just exists. It just exists. That's the existence element. That's just the existence element. It's not going to talk. It just says we're this. It means the intelligence and mind based on the ego then will argue. Because one thing is this would be the best to do, but the other one is this is what I'd like to do. Or this is what you should do, but this is what I want to do. That's the argument.
Okay.
Srila Prabhupada adds, regardless of the community in which one was born, if one develops the qualities of a brahmana, he should be accepted as a brahmana. And he then may be offered the order of sannyas. Unless one is qualified in terms of the brahminical symptoms, one cannot take sannyas. Right? So it's not a matter of prestige in that, oh, you know, the sannyas, the prestige, they get prestige. It's not about that. Giving classes is not about prestige. Leading kirtan is not about prestige. Right? It's about the brahminical qualities. Unless one, okay, so what we're not saying is that, we're saying anybody who has the brahminical qualifications can take sannyas. But we're not talking about what their birth is. We're talking about what's the nature. You know, just for example, Lokanath Maharaj, he was the head pujari in Juhu, when it was, you know, in the tin shed. And he, always there, always very, you know, nice, always happy, you know, always engaged in the puja, nothing bothered him, like that. And so then he probably gave him sannyas. You understand? He manifests that. You understand? He's manifesting the brahminical nature. You see, he's always in the kirtan, always in the preaching, always in the... But by background, you could say he came from a village that were into farming and this and that. So you could say, you know, technically he should be a Vaishya. But that was his birth. But his actual qualities he manifests is that of a Brahmin. Therefore, then he's qualified for sannyas. Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is that it's not about the background, it's about the qualities you have. In designating a person a Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, birth is not the essential symptom. Not essential means that may be a starting point. You'll start from there, but if you find it doesn't match up, then you'll adjust it. But if in starting from that point, identifies itself in that way, or then you would say, yes, it naturally continues that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. This understanding is very important. Herein, Narad Muni distinctly says that one may be accepted according to the caste of his birth if he has the corresponding qualifications. Right? So, in other words, what he's born in, he has the qualifications of that, then we can say, yes, he is of that. But if he's born in and he doesn't have, so it's higher or lower, we'll accept it by what qualities he has. Right? That's why he says it's not essential that it's by birth, but generally you would start with birth. But it's important that you very important that you understand that this is how it works, because if you don't, then one doesn't understand varnashram. Right? And this is just varnashram. Daiva varnashram means you do everything for Krishna. So there isn't by birth that's varnashram, and by not by birth that's daiva varnashram. No, that's just varnashram. Daiva varnashram is you do everything for Krishna. Okay. He may be accepted according to the caste of his birth if he has the corresponding qualifications. But otherwise he should not. One who has attained the qualifications of a Brahmin, regardless of where he was born, should be accepted as a Brahmana. Similarly, if one has developed the qualities of a Shudra or a Chandala, regardless of where he was born, he should be accepted in terms of those symptoms. Right? So in other words, we're taking Brahman, then the other extreme Shudra, and then we're taking the extreme outside of that Chandala, so therefore... Right? Because within the standard, Chandala is your lowest. It's a direct mix. When you mix again, then they get lower than that. So that's why we use Chandala, because it's the lowest of the direct mixes. But we're mixes of mixes, so we're even outside that. So Chandala looks good for us. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.